Once upon a time. Welcome to Australian Book Lovers, your destination for imagination.
A big warm welcome to everyone and a huge thank you for joining us once again for the Australian Book Lovers podcast and, of course, our very special industry edition. Our mission is to always bring fabulous Australian and Indigenous literature spanning a whole range of genres to book lovers all around the globe, as well as fantastic resources and information for passionate authors looking to write their next bestseller. I am Darren Kazenko, dystopian sci-fi and horror author, reader, and one of your hosts and co-founder of the Australian Book Lovers, coming to you today from Corner Country.
And I'm Veronica Strachan, aka V.E. Patton, fantasy, memoir, and picture book writer, and voracious reader, your co-host and co-founder of Australian Book Lovers, coming to you today from a very rainy Wurundjeri country.
Oh, yes, I think I was surprised because we haven't copped the weather down here on the coast, but I did see on the news that apparently yesterday that some of the big weather you're having at the moment swept through the north of our lovely little city here, and we copped a lot of hail and storms and mini almost cyclones. So, yes, it obviously made its arrival.
Yes, one kind of last hurrah, I think, for, it's supposed to be spring, but it's a bit tumultuous here.
Well, down here, yeah, we've got the rain, but the warm weather, so it's a little bit tropical, so it's good. Yeah. So spring is still has a promise in the air, which is good.
Very good.
But yes, an industry special, and, you know, so fantastic to hear of the Queensland Writers Association being a part of our podcast, which is just amazing.
It is fantastic, and they are a very, I'll say important for Queensland, but they are very active, innovative player in the Writers Centre community, and they're doing some fantastic things. It was lovely to chat with Laurie J. This was the second time that we chatted, because unfortunately the first time we chatted, the technology let us down a bit, and one of the audio tracks was unsavable, despite our fabulous editor, aka Darren Kazenko. So yes, we had a lovely chat with Laurie J, who's the CEO of Queensland Writers Centre. And we were lucky enough, because you were unavailable, to be able to tap into Kevin Clare. And Kevin, as some of your listeners will know, is one of our authors who we interviewed some time ago. And he's also an active member of the writing community and a supporter of some of the festivals and bits and pieces. And Kevin he was one of the attendees at one of the conferences that Queensland Writers put up. So he had a little bit of inside knowledge. I thought, yep, he's in. He was happy to help, and it was a great chat.
Kevin is an awesome gentleman. I think if I had to describe him, and I've never even met the guy, but for all, you know, the way he's been involved with Australian Book Lovers and obviously the way he's all of his books he's submitted, he's always been a part of the podcast. He's always submitted great audio. And as you just mentioned, he was more than happy to, join in with you to chat with Laurie J for this wonderful interview. So, you know, he's a gentleman of inspiration. And, I suspect, again, I haven't met the guy yet in person. I hope to once our borders open. But I suspect he has the kind of character that probably can't be captured by words alone, because it probably jumps out a little bit more than that.
Yes.
So, Kevin, thank you so much. And Laurie J, thank you so much for agreeing to, you know, basically re-record this one. Because, yes, technology does get in the way sometimes. And it does. Are at the mercy of little electronic signals. And every now and then, they just don't, I guess, pulse the right way. So
No, that's right. And look, I will admit, it's just a little bit noisy in the background. Laurie J was in the State Library, and we did have just a little bit of background. But it's the background of library, so that's all good. And there's an occasional little glitch. But that is how you know that it was real life.
Yes, that's right. And, well, it's good to hear that libraries aren't just silent vacuums. They're actually hives of activity, which is excellent. And, yeah, and it's all about life. So, you know, it's content that's most important. Yeah. This isn't an album. This is all about content and experience and learning from, you know, people like Laurie J, what it takes to run a writer's centre, and obviously all the wonderful, I guess, courses and, you know, opportunities for writers out there that, that represents. Yeah.
And such great experience and generosity of, you know, sharing her knowledge and those kind of things. She had some fantastic things to say and, you know, I won't spoil it all, but there's a couple that I just wanted to share with our listeners just to say. Laurie J talks about, you know, we talk about supporting emerging writers and school kids and all those kind of things, and she mentioned something about you can't go from school to uni to Hemingway. And I thought, oh, that's just perfect. You know, that's just like, no, you can't do that. There
is a lot
of support. Yeah. And the other thing is that she believes in stepping away from mediocrity. And I just, yeah, I really thought that she's somebody who has been in the creative arts and she's got a, you know, a great background in all sorts of different arts and marketing and those things, not just here but in the US and other places as well. So it was a great chat.
And not only that, I noticed when I, you know, visiting the Queensland Writers website, one of the events is the Writers Plan with Laurie J. Ellis.
Yes.
And that is all about getting set for 22. And, you know, obviously establishing, you know, getting assistance with establishing a writing plan. And I was looking at that and thinking, you know what, that is amazing. Because if we have learned anything, you know, from our recent, I guess, experience in the last year, is that you can only take life day by day. You know, who knows what tomorrow is going to bring as far as disruption and being forced to change your daily pattern or goals. But with a writing plan in place, especially for 22, because, well, we see how 2021 came out. Who knows what 22 is going to bring. But with a writing plan in place, you'll be ready for anything that the day throws at you. Because, you know, I'm assuming all you need is a pencil, maybe a piece of paper and imagination. But a writing plan is something that no matter where you're caught, no matter what's happening, if you've got something like that in place, You've planned for anything. So that was really cool to see. So I'm really looking forward to hear what she has to tell us about, well, obviously about the Writers' Centre, but I'm hoping she chats a little bit about the Writers' Plan.
A little bit. She does talk about why it's important and those kind of things. So, yeah, there is a mention.
Fantastic. And one other thing I saw on the website, of course, well, not of course, but something that I noticed was that there is an event called Black Belt in Writing with Ike Flinhart.
Yes.
And that is, well, basically, Ike Flinhart is, we've got one of her anthologies on our website called Blackbird Scene.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, Ike is no longer with us.
Yeah.
But the course is in her Black Belt in Writing. Ike shares her life lessons and passions. She explains how things she's learned from martial arts training are applicable to writing. She writes about determination, strength, respect, collaboration, adaptability, and facing the inner darkness. And her writing tips and motivation will help all writers develop their craft. And the best part of all proceeds from Black Belt in Writing with Ike Flinhart go to the Ike Flinhart Writing Residency Program.
Yeah.
And I think that's fantastic. But obviously, you know, that was a wonderful submission that we got very back in the early days of the website. Mm. When I say early days, as in for the website, we're still an early website.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was a, you know, quite a sad thing to hear, but also an inspirational, I guess, result from such a sad day because now...
from her work.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's a beautiful part of Queensland Writers Association as well.
She was such an incredible contributor in the same way as so many others, but she was such an, Ike Flinhart was such an incredible contributor that, you know, like we just started out and we just begun, but, you know, bang, it, despite the fact that she was, quite a world-renowned author, she put her book in and, you know, gave us an opportunity to say we have somebody of her caliber that we're representing her books. And, yeah, that was just brilliant. So still sadly missed. She touched a lot of lives. So she has left a great legacy.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's an opportunity for all writers out there across the nation to, you know, gain something magical from her experience and keep some magic alive. And that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
But before we go to the wonderful interview, at the time of recording, and I know this is off the cuff, however, because it's a Queensland special.
Right.
Did you know that there is a historic moment announced today, so at the time of recording 11 hours ago, that Daintree National Park returned to the eastern, now I hope I pronounce this right, Kaka Yalanji people.
That's fantastic.
So the world's oldest living rainforest has been returned to its custodians in a historic handback ceremony in far north Queensland. And, you know, I think from you, Veronica, you've taught me the importance of recognising and acknowledging the traditional owners of this land. And now that we're about to introduce a fantastic interview with yourself and Kevin for Laurie J, but obviously Queensland Writers Association, and what a little bit of timing at the time of recording.
Absolutely
that little
perfect.
Event is happening. So I think that's a little bit of serendipity and magic and, you know, I think maybe makes it a little bit special.
It does make it a little bit special, and it's kind of the perfect lead-in because you'll hear in the early parts of the interview, we get a little bit caught up in the whole, there is a native animal where the State Library and where the Queensland Writers Centre is. So, yeah, it's very good, but ideal, in fact, as I'm listening to the Parnman, the rain, which is, that's the word for rain in Wurundjeri. Although, interestingly, chatting also to, listening to, sorry, a documentary on Scotland and Ireland, which husband being, you know, only one generation out from the old country, there's something ridiculous like 15 different words for snow in Scottish Gaelic, so that's obviously something that they have a lot of. So I suspect that there is more than one word for rain, and sometimes I feel like the English language, there are places where it misses out on some of that subtlety and those kind of things. But then you read some beautiful prose or poetry and you think, yeah, you know what, it's good. So I love that there is more language coming in. I love that you've got the Daintree going back to the traditional owners. That's just brilliant.
Yeah, I think really it's a beautiful good. Moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Laurie J. Ellis, for a wonderful interview, which I'm about to enjoy myself. Thank you, Kevin Clure, again, a gentleman of inspiration that can't be captured by words. So we hope to see you sometime when the borders open and maybe we can organise some excellent Australian Book Lovers events. And thank you, Veronica, for this awesome interview. And, yeah, maybe this is a tribute to... Yeah, we contribute to this very special moment at the time of recording for this Queensland Writers Association interview.
Excellent. All right. So, everybody, we are about to chat with the CEO of the Queensland Writers Centre, Laurie J. Ellis, and I am ably supported by one of our fabulous writers, Kevin Clare.
Yay! Let's go.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to our latest interview with industry experts. And I am absolutely delighted to say not only do I have Laurie J. Ellis, the CEO from the Queensland Writers Centres, with me. Hi, Laurie J.
Hi, thank you for having me, Veronica and Kevin.
No worries. And so Laurie J. has given us a hint. We also have Kevin Clare. So one of our fabulous authors has an really, I think we've had you on a few times, Kevin, talking about a number of different things. He's agreed to be my co-interviewer for today. So welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for asking me to co-interview the lovely Laurie J. Ellis.
Fantastic. I need to, of course, introduce myself just in case people are worried that they don't know who I am. This is Veronica Strachan, and I'm coming to you today from Wurundjeri country. And I know we covered this last time. So Laurie J and I are on round two of this interview because we had some technical difficulties and couldn't save the recording, unfortunately. So we might be able to go deeper or broader or talk about a whole range of different things. But what we did talk about is that the Wurundjeri people are often known as the Whitchity Grub people because the Djeri, the D-J-E-R-I on the end, is in fact the Woiwurrung language for the grub found in or near all of the Manigums, the Wurrun, which is the front of Wurundjeri. And we discovered that, Laurie J, on the your traditional owners, you've also got an animal involved in some of the naming.
So we have the Yuggera and Turrbal people, and we're on a place, like the State Library of Queensland is on a place named after a water rat. And the area that it surrounds is Turrbal, and it is the storytellers. So it's a place of the storytellers, and a lot of those stories were about the water rat, which is, you know, a native animal to this region in Queensland.
Fantastic. And now we're going to put you on the spot, Kevin. So who are the traditional owners where you are today?
Oh, you haven't put me on the spot. I know this so well because I used to broadcast for Gadigal Information Services.
Excellent.
So I'm on Gadigal land. I'm on Gadigal land, part of the Eora Nation. And Gadigal actually means, because I was caught out on a trivia question once, Gadigal means the relationship between mother and child.
Interesting. Yeah, it's when you start to get underneath language, it is just so fascinating. And currently I'm also reading the, The Shape of Sound by Fiona, and I'm going to fluff her name. I don't remember, but it's about a woman who is partially deaf and learning Auslan and a whole lot of different things. So language is just absolutely fascinating.
True.
I think we're getting more and more of our Indigenous language creeping into every day, which is fantastic. And I did just see a call for New Zealand. They're keen to have a lot of their place names returned to the Maori language, the original language. So there you go. That was a long-winded
but
kind
they are
of...
also...
Go on.
No. I've got to interrupt for a second. They are also considering renaming New Zealand back to its original name, which I can't remember off the top of my head because it's
Aotearoa, and I've probably said incorrectly. So please excuse us all our Kiwi friends. But it's not about...
I've lived in New Zealand as well, and I have a young child, and in New Zealand, in the first years, they're taught Maori. So they're taught colours and language and hello and numbers and things like that. And when you return to Australia, there is no corresponding learning of even one, native language, which I know there's so many, it's complicated. But there is that missing, it to become part of our vernacular, we have to put ourselves in a position to be able to hear it and say it and practice it and get it wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're quite right. My little grandnephew, he's down in Balnarring in the Mornington Peninsula, and his kindergarten have a great, they're trying to do that kind of integrative language. And so they have one of the local elders come and talk to all the kids, you know, semi-regularly. And so he can tell me about Bunjil, and he can tell me that the crow's name is Wah, and they do walks and back to country. And if, you know, they find dead insects or birds or whatever, they go and take the bodies, you know, back and put them back in country and those kind of things. So there's little bits of pockets of things happening. This is in the eastern, sides, of course, whereas one of our friends on Twitter is doing her master. She's up in Broome, and she's got a great connection, of course, to all the local kids up there and the languages, and they do their book reports and all those kind of things. So those kids are amazing. They learn, you know, not only English, but they might learn mother's language, father's language, Australian pidgin, Indigenous Aboriginal pidgin, all those kind of things. So when those minds are elastic, that's when we need to get them.
Absolutely. Mm.
Yeah. Now, Kevin, you had something else to throw into the mix there.
No, not in this part of the conversation. I've got a couple of questions lined up for Laurie J, but I'll let you start the interview, Veronica.
We better get into it then. All right. So, Laurie J, as I mentioned, we have chatted before, but what really interests me, I guess, is the history of each writing centre. You know, what are they offering now? How are they coping with COVID and all those kind of things? So perhaps we'll start a little bit about how long has the Queensland Writers' Centre been about, and have you got any sort of history?
Yes, sure. So bummers of all bummers, we turned 30 in the year of the first COVID, so we got to celebrate not much, and there was so much to celebrate. So we were founded by Thea Rasley and David Maloof and Noonuckle. There was lots of really important Queensland writers who started the centre, and they started it so that writers could have a place to learn craft to develop workshop and to develop the art of writing. Their constitution was pretty strong, mm-hmm. and it still determines some of the things that we do today, like our management committee needs to be writers or from the membership as writers, and we can still employ people who are closely related to the management committee for their writing work, because they realise still that writers need lots of access to be able to earn revenue. Yes. So lots of the things that happened in those beginning years were so incredibly important. When we were looking at our 30th, one of the things we wanted to do was recreate the train trip. So Thea Rasley took a group of writers, including a particularly young Nick Earle, Tim Winton, out to Longreach on mm-hmm. a train, and they stopped off along the way and they did readings and they worked with locals and they shared writing all the way through to Longreach, and then they brought the train back. We were so impressed with like the sheer kind of pioneering that they had in those days. Like there are photographs of Thea Rasley driving the bus that took them out in places. We were so impressed with that we wanted to make sure that pioneering, protecting writers, creating a place of engagement and community is still the real focus of the Queensland Writers Centre. Mm. And so now we're at 31 this year, and we've had some celebrations, and we have a Quills group now, which is an alumni of CEOs and chairs who have run this centre successfully over the years to get us to where we are today. Mm-hmm. And then excitingly, just last week, we found out that we've received our operational funding from the Queensland government through Queensland for another 4 years.
So, yay! Congratulations!
Yay!
It's very exciting because we've seen some of the other writers' centres in other states be like, I want to say abandoned, but this is the home of nurturing writers. Mm. We can't expect them to go from school to uni to Hemingway.
I love that.
There's a pathway that needs to be followed, and there's development, and that's part of our job. And I think when writer centres are unfunded, that's the hole we're going to see in 10 years, is that we haven't been nurturing talent consistently.
Yeah.
So, but in our 31st year, we're happy campers this week. So
excellent. And, celebrating. But, of course, you wouldn't be spending money on champagne. No funding. Well, we won't mention that, but I'm sure that there were some good celebrations going on. And, look, I think it's incredibly important. I love that school, Uni Hemingway. Fantastic. We'll be quoting that somewhere. But, Laurie J, to think about the experiential nature of writing and the depth and breadth of what you put in as a writer. So many writers take many years to come to mm-hmm. the point where their voice is strong and they are confident in what they're doing, you know, regardless of which publishing path. What are the services that Queensland Writers Centre particularly feels is good for, say, you know, new writers or mm-hmm. people who want to begin a creative or nonfiction writing life?
Yeah, I think one of the questions we always ask when someone says, so I've written a book, here I am, see me, we're kind of like, how do you know you're ready? Mm. Like, what are the steps that we've done here to ensure that this is your best work that you can put forward and that you're ready for publication or even like ready to present it to my family or ready to, you know, look at history for a private club or something like that, which we see those works come through as well. Mm-hmm. How do you know? And it is services like a manuscript assessment. Like if you're a first or second or third time writer, let's get an assessment done on that work so that you can figure out the traps that you don't even know that you've got the things that, you know, you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. How do we fix those things for you so that you can translate that into book 2 and 3 and 4 and get yourself ready? Because you probably only have one or two shots at each publishing house when you go in with one piece mm-hmm. to put forward that good foot. And maybe they're going to do some work later on, but we really do here believe that you should send in your best work that you possibly can in those first instances and then develop over time, you know, finding your own editor and things like that. The second one we do, which has been really great for authors of all different types of backgrounds, is we have a consult. So it's 30 minutes, $100, and here's 3 recommendations mm. of what to do next. Mm-hmm. And it helps people like, oh, I've got a children's book or I want to write my family history, or I really want to be in competitions this year, like the Rochelle or something, what do I need to do to get ready for those? And we'd take a quick look at their work and go, these are the next three things for you to take away and go and do, so that you're not spinning your wheels doing, you know, the wrong thing. Yeah, so many times we see, I don't know if you've seen this, Veronica and Kevin, you'll see people come in with, I've had it edited. And you're like, oh, but like you've just like leapt past draft three or four and you've leapt past, you know, all of these things.
Yes.
And it's expensive.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you need to make sure that you kind of in the right space. Mm. I think another thing that's really good, and I know other writer centers have this as well, but it's your beta readers that help you see what you can't see. So we do have, often when we've got people in the space, like from interns or volunteers or stuff like that, we're constantly training up new readers and so that they can provide valuable feedback and, like, you know, not just to say what's not great about it, but these are the things that you're doing really well. Keep going. Mm-hmm. These are the other things. And they're just really quick reads of, say, 50 pages to get them understanding where they're sitting in the spectrum of writing. And then, yeah, we say, yeah, surgery or manuscript assessment or consult, and try and get them moving on their way.
I love the surgery, of course.
Well, Laurie Jake, sorry, can I just ask a question? When, say, someone wants to come to you for advice and for your services, just as a piece of advice, how much work should they do on their manuscript before they come to you for some of your services?
That's a good question, because there's two answers. first of all, I think you want to have done everything you think you can on your own. So, and I think that is about, you know, workshopping and learning craft and things like that. But the second thing is, if you're trying to do something that you've never done before, having those initial first conversations to make sure you go down the right pathway early and you don't waste any of your time is also quite beneficial. One example I would have is, we've had a person in who has written a particularly strong fantasy novel, but it's nearly 300,000 words. And I'm like, mate, where's this going to be published? Like, you need to have these conversations early on so that you could have maybe crafted it to a different, you know, word count, or you would have looked at it maybe as a trilogy, or you would have had more conversations around how you wanted to get there, rather than, because a 300,000 word manuscript assessment, that's a lot of money.
Yes.
So, you know, sometimes it's about doing it at the head, but I think when we want to see work coming into us, it's as much as you can do yourself. And so I wouldn't have done a line edit or anything like that. Maybe a structural, if you got tangled up and you didn't know how you wanted your narrative to plan out. Those things are so valuable to have those conversations early. But yeah, normally I would say do as much as you can, then let us read it, and then we'll go, right, you've missed up structure, or your character arcs aren't really fantastic, or, you know, this is pretty good, it's a polish, and then let's go and find out who you look like on shelf and get you, you know, near a publisher or something like that.
Laurie Jo, do you think there's a naivety from perhaps an older beginner writer who's been expert in their own field or whatever, that writing is just writing a book and, you know, they just land it on your desk? Is there that sort of, I won't say lack of understanding, but just that unknowing about the depth of work involved in writing and publishing?
So one of the things I always think when, because I've been working with writers here now for 4 years, it's how much the writer has to put out there first before anybody else is coming to the table. They're investing in themselves. They're probably paying for a mentor or an assessment or, you know, some kind of work. They're right out there on their own investing before anyone else is really looking at them. And you feel like no one, sometimes when writers come in, you're like, do you realize that we haven't done enough work yet on this piece for it probably, mostly, for it to be there? And I think we see that not just with emerging writers later in life, but all writers, is it's not just I've written it and it's gold. There are other people who participate. I think there's a lack of understanding of how many other people participate in the writing process. Is really sometimes it's a little bit of the auteur kind of view of writing. So I think that's a big problem that we work with. People who get picked up quickly and into publishing, they learn that very easily.
Yes,
they're learning it really, really quickly and in a fast way. But if you're floundering and you still haven't got a strong piece and things like that, there is a bit of a hole in that knowledge about how much it's going to take, how many drafts. We had Natasha Lester on for a piece just recently, and she's so great. She's like, my first book, 13 drafts. And you can see everybody go, what?
What?
I'm at my second and I'm ready to go. And she's like, no, that's what it needed. So I think, you know, strong writers sharing their stories is another way for you to get that information. But you have to believe you're going to be one of those, not, you know, one of the superstars who's just first draft picked up, debut novel, that kind of thing.
Yeah, away you go. Okay. Kevin, over to you. Your shot. I'm hogging the questions here.
Oh, look, something I was interested, Laurie J, you've been a marketing director. And I just want to know if you had any marketing tips for us indie and small press authors.
Oh, I love that question, and I do. Because I always argue that the audience belongs to the author, and, you know, even when you're picked up by a major house or, you know, top five or something like that, so much of the talking to audience now is still directed by even big name authors, that they're looking after that audience, because if you move or shift or change direction, you want to take those with you. And I think people who enjoy social, or who enjoy like elements of social like Instagram or something like that, they're doing really well in this space, and they can look after themselves in a hybrid or indie way. But then I also think some of the collaborations we're starting to see between writers of the same level or of the same genre type, they're doing well as well. I'm reminded of one I've just seen recently where 13 authors, six big names, six relatively smaller names coming together, so that the big name is getting it into the inbox and clicked open. But maybe there's that audience transfer, or, you know, that first time, oh, I might try this new author. And that's kind of a really neat model as well. I think currently authors who control their mailing lists are doing really well in this space, but they have to be in that, you know, they have to be in that mindset. And I think if they're not, then book signings and things like that are other ways to go, but they're much more traditional, a little bit harder to get sometimes, and sometimes outside of your control. But how you talk to your audience, if you've got mailing lists and stuff, that's up to you. So
that's great advice. I remember I wanted to do a book launch once, but the place I was going to do the book launch at expected me to bring most of the audience, and I thought, No, I was hoping you'd have regular people on your mailing list who could discover me. So in the end, it was like, no, it's a lot of money for just me putting on a party for my friends.
Yes.
No, it is. And like we were talking to a couple of people recently, you know, they're like, book launch isn't even included in my traditional publishing deal. I'm like, the world has shifted so far that, you know, some of these things that we think are what an author's going to get, a little bit different or slightly altered. And I think then post-COVID, they're probably never going to return, because those models are really, you know, moving along. But I think authors control your audience and look after them and love them. Get those repeat sales is, you know, that's my big piece of advice to all people that come in here.
That's good. It is very helpful advice. Yeah. So touching on the dreaded COVID, let's bring the pandemic elephant front and centre. What has Queensland writers and, you know, Queensland, we know, haven't experienced quite the lengthy lockdowns that, say, New South Wales and Victoria have, but I know there's been still restrictions and those kind of things. How much did you have to adapt your program? Because, you know, imagine you've got a big remote and rural sector as well. Yes. How much did you have to adapt when COVID hit?
So we felt really lucky at the beginning of COVID, but because we had already started live streaming about 6 months beforehand.
Fantastic.
We had seen that this was, because of our rural and remote membership base. Mm-hmm. We knew that this was an important move to us to be making. So we were really ready. That allowed us to continue to move a lot of our program straight away online really quickly. Mm-hmm. And we could also, we led by this is how, you know, this is how live streaming with writers can work. Mm-hmm. We also were able to help libraries in our network, which was something really unexpected. We were able to share our program with them when they couldn't have anybody walk into their libraries. That was really, wow, we felt so vindicated by kind of that work. But as a result, everyone's now kind of caught up. Mm. And so we're like, what happens next? What's the next thing that, you know, we should be doing, because everyone now is up on live stream and things like that. We haven't solved that yet. Watch this space.
I was going to say, did you keep your additional rural attendees? Do you think that you've, you know, drawn a few more people into your net, or have they kind of dropped off now?
I think through COVID, we really captured them. We had one of the largest AGMs in our history with people like signing in from all over Queensland, because COVID was quite new then and this was one activity to do. We are definitely seeing a cooling off now of people on live stream. Mm-hmm. And it was probably back. It's still higher than pre-COVID numbers, but it's, you know, it's about people accessing it because it fits into their lifestyle more now than I just want to see somebody. I'll go and do a live stream. So there has been a definite cooling off. Our regional and rural, we've also been still out to them. In both years, we've been able to, we've just been out to Longreach, Blackhall, Winton and Bacalden for Telling Our Stories to the World, which was sponsored by Department of Health. And that was all about small acts of writing and mental health. So we'd been out to them in 2019. And then this year we've been Julia Creek, Cloncurry, McKinley, right out to Mount Isa and Camomile, with a second wave of Telling Our Stories to the World sponsored by the Department of Environment, really talking about climate issues with those people. So, and that's still in process. So we have been able to maintain going out to rural and regional to see them, but it is pared back. Mm-hmm. And you're lucky. Yeah, sometimes we've been lucky that we're in between a lockdown, and it's just as soon as we've come back, there's been a lockdown or something like that.
Nice, but those timing.
Those rural and regional voices are very important. They're quite unique. They don't sound like anyone else, and we want to make sure that they've got access to writing as well.
Yeah, fantastic. That's good. Kevin, your turn.
Yeah, I'm going to go a bit ethereal here, Laura Jo, just a little bit, because I know you've been a CEO of the Community Arts Studio. And I'm also fascinated that you're a manager of a New York art studio. And seeing, you know, writing, art, all of it is art. In your opinion, what makes good art?
Oh, so
great question.
I was loving where you were going there for a second, Kevin. So I was really lucky after I finished my arts degree, I got to step straight into a gallery in New York, and you see the world, we're Australian, we see art in a very specific light. In New York, you see art as something that can sustain. Yeah, so I started straight out of high school, and then I went, out of university for my degree, and I went straight into a New York gallery. And as an Australian, you started to see a shift in what art could mean, because people could earn livelihoods off it. They had a creative process and they were creating things that were meaningful to them and to their audience. Coming back home, I tried to like do the same with galleries as well. But it's a different. It was still quite young here when I was coming back to make that successful. But it's so important to me that people have creative avenues, and because I think art is what people make of it. And then I also think it's what the audience makes of it. Mm. And that's where I think writers connecting with audience, if they're literary and they've got people who are enjoying reading that work, if they're journal writers and people enjoying connecting with that work, or their genre writers, you know, connecting with horror and fantasy and romance, I don't care. I think as long as you find the audience for your work and your expression, that's where I think, for me, that's the greatest goal, is that you're trying to connect with your work to somebody. So I hope that answered you.
No, because something that is very relevant to me and the way I think about art is, a long time ago I used to interesting. And our head teacher used to always say, "You are there for the audience. The audience isn't there for you." And yeah, that's the same philosophy. You've got to do your craft for an audience. It's not about, you know, going solo and wanting love.
Yeah, we also have people who, like, I just want to finish this before I die. I want to leave this for my family and stuff. That's their audience. Mm. So how they choose to find it or to produce or to finish for that audience, I find completely valid. And if your audience is bigger than that or more intellectual than that, then write for those people. But I don't think it's the audience's job to, you know, are you not entertained? Yeah. I think it's our job to do that kind of, yeah, to get our creative vision for our audience. Yeah.
Let's go a slightly different form of art. And I want to talk to you about sustainable business practices. And people might go, yeah, that's not art. But it so is. And it can be so creative. I spent some time as a CEO of an IT company. And when I'd interview people, I'd say, you know, we're looking for creative people. And they'd go, oh, but I code, you know, or I'd test IT. And I go, yeah, but have you written a piece of code that got you excited and passionate? And they go, oh yeah, okay, I'll think about that. Even when thinking about business practices, and you are known for having that emphasis on sustainable business practices. How much has that and your love or your ability or your skill or your strength, whatever you like to call it, been a part of where you've taken the Queensland Writers' Centre and, dare I say it, successfully now for an additional 4 years funding?
I do think we've had a successful couple of years, and I think it is the innovation that has... It's building community and the innovation that's sat beside it without being like an egotistical maniac. But I think those things are very important. And that is because we have a creative team, and all we've asked them to do is turn that creative nous, that creative knowledge, over onto the problems that we have inside the business. Yeah. So a good example would be, we had a really wonderful manuscript development program, but it was costing arms and legs. Mm-hmm. So how do we keep the core of that? How do we keep delivering for writers so that they can improve their craft and get closer to publication, but also not lose, you know, as a business? Mm-hmm. And so the ABLE suites with Publishable, Scriptable, Adaptable and Printable, they've come through as, here is a place where writers will still be able to be told and shown stuff about their work. We'll teach them how to pitch. We'll get them in front of publishers. But we're not, as a business, losing money in order to do that. We're just trying to break even on those things so that it's fair for everyone.
Mm, fantastic. Yeah.
And I think we have a really creative team. Like, we've got musicians and screenwriters and film producers and literary writers on the team, and me with my full belief in art, with my artistic background. And all we do is apply it to those business problems to make them solutions and to figure them out. And it like, you'll know me in the office. I'll have Diet Cokes on my table if I can't figure something out. We throw it open to the team and we get, you know, this unique view from creative people. I think all teams should have a creative on them.
Yes.
You know, because it's just a different mindset of how we're going to try and tackle something. And nothing's ever lost. It's just maybe broken or kind of facing the wrong way. And you put a creative on it and they'll be able to help you see that. So, big believer in more arts orgs being, yeah, financially viable. The other thing on sustainability, though, is, I mean, we're very excited to have our operational funding. We are really appreciative of that because we've been well supported by the Queensland government. But we also said we need to make a model where we self-sustain more. Mm-hmm. So, you know, over the last 3 years, we've looked at the other pillars like engagement and our financial viability and craft, which has always been a backbone of the centre. How do we make each of these a strong pillar so that if one gets knocked over, the others can still hold us up? And that's kind of where we're currently sitting. We're not perfect. We've got a long way to go. But having a model where we want to self-sustain more while we also have access to some, you know, funding support, that's pretty critical. Mm. It's critical for us. It's critical for a writer. as well.
And I think very much represents what's happening in the world today is we can no longer rely on those old models of business, regardless of what business you're in, because the world is changing. You know, rugs pulled out from under feet, lockdowns, vaccinations, travel, all those kind of things. We do need to be adaptable and, yeah, put some sustainable practices in that sometimes people think that that means you can't do new things or it's all about being green, but it's not necessarily. It's about having, as you say, a creative at the table, being able to be open to what ideas people have and to look at problems differently, to problem solve and, you know, root cause analysis around all those kind of things, but to do that in a way that is sustainable so that people feel able to jump to the table and say, hey, I've had this idea. Can we, you know, run it through the ringer?
Yeah. And we have a lot of volunteers in here as well. And after they'll do membership calls and just talk to our members and say, hi, how's things going? How's the writing practice? Especially through COVID, we kind of increased that because some authors were, it was a struggle for some people. Mm. And one of the things that they come back to us with ideas. Yeah. They'll be like, hey, these guys said this, and we'll just put it on a post-it note and we'll mull it over and put it on the board of, you know, ideas to think about. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean it happens, but that is right from the coalface.
Yes.
So we should listen to it and hear, do we have something that's actually could fit this? Should we? All those kinds of questions. So, yeah, I think your base telling, your membership telling you what's happening is really important to listen to as well.
It is good.
That's a very good point too, yes. Yeah, I mean, you've got the brains trust there. Why not tap into that? Yes.
Yeah.
Because everyone's thinking on their feet at the moment. Yeah.
All right. I just wanted to finish up with a little bit about the ABLES, because I think that that was one thing that I, you know, jumped out when you go to the Queensland Writers, which is queenslandwriters.org.au. When you have a look at what you offer under the ABLES, there's the publishable, the scriptable, the printable, the adaptable. Have you got just a, you know, a quick byline for each of those and how they work?
Sure. Adaptable was our first one and it's been such a success. We've got 13 active options for people, for writers out in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. It is about taking your page to screen. So you pitch, we get you trained up, you learn how to pitch, you go to, last year was at the Gold Coast Film Festival, and we set you up with with producers who are looking for work to adapt. And currently in market over the first 3 years, we've got 13, and one is about to, is so close to production, we can't stand it.
Oh, that's good.
That's really cool. The second was publishable, which is kind of like the old Hachette manuscript development program. Mm-hmm. We just slightly changed it to fit, you know, the changing times. Mm-hmm. We look for 25 pieces. We elevate all of those. So we work on manuscript development with those people. They get workshops. And every person who enters an ABLE also gets a free workshop regardless on something that we've seen across the whole cohort of entries. So, for example, the first year synopsis were really poor. So let's, like, the workshop we gifted was, let's go learn about how to do a Kraken synopsis. Mm-hmm. But publishable is then you learn how to pitch and you get put in front of one of the major houses or a house that suits you inside Australia. Mm-hmm. We're up to our 10 finalists right now, and some of those are starting to be matched now with the likes of Hachette and Penguin Random House and Text and Curtis Brown. We're starting to match those now. Scriptable is for emerging talent in script writing, and they get mentorships. So we'll put them with somebody like Steve Irwin or Lee McGrath, and they get between five and 10 hours to work with them on the script, but also on them as a new emerging script writing talent in television and film. Mm-hmm. That's opening very soon. And then printable is about your brand as an author. How are you presenting yourself? Part of what you're always asked now, even in traditional publishing, is what's your audience base? Do you have a website? Where are you on social? So we're like, let's try and get ahead of that game so that you can go in with some strong numbers mm-hmm. and some real understanding of what you want your brand to be, so it's not all dictated to you as well. And that opens up like later in October, and we run it in December. And we just were meeting with one person this morning, and he's just, Jack Rooney, he's just taken off with this notion of getting his brand together. He's built a little tribe of people to work with him to promote the story of crime writers and other spec fiction writers around here. And it's just giving them those first tools, and then let's see what they do. And some of them have been boom, they've been fantastic. So the Ables we're very proud of, but yeah, there's a lot of hard work behind those, and a ton of reading goes.
Oh, sorry, Laurie, can I just ask a question? Because this is something I know I had to really consider and really think about 2 years ago, and you brought it up. When someone is considering their brand, how should they go about it? How do they look at themselves and think of, how do I brand myself graphically? Maybe a slogan, maybe their profile pic. What should they consider when they're trying to find their brand?
Okay, so first things I think you should do is look at where you want to sit on shelf eventually. So who are the authors beside you? What are the types of works beside you? And start to see where your place would be in that. And you don't want to have too many people near you that are identical. Right. So you need to make sure you've got some point of difference. But at the same time, you want to do something that makes you feel okay. There's no good opening up an Instagram account and spending all of your time there and not writing because you're actually not in love with that format. So you've got to choose a platform that you're pretty comfortable with to be able to, you know, it could be blogging, could be newsletter, because that fits with writers pretty well. And then the third thing is you want to not just bore them entirely with your baby, your book. You need to think about some other things around you that's interesting, that's not hard work for you. So I'm kind of, I always think of Rachel Amphlett. She was living in Queensland for a long time. She's now in the UK, and she didn't like putting her photograph up on her Instagram very often, but she always took pictures of the pub food that she was eating in England when she was writing. It became really like, where is she now? You know, she was off in some fantastic place with bangers and mash or something, and her whippet puppy. And so she had stories about her writing and her craft and sitting down, and then she had this other train of interest that we could kind of all hook into. This is a couple of years, and now she's much more comfortable about having her face on her page a bit more. But, you know, you don't have to always start with being the loudest writer in the room. You can choose something, choose something around brand that suits you. And I always encourage people to, find out your point of difference on shelf, find a platform that's easy for you and not hard work, and then go and determine how far you want to go and stick to that little cloud of information. Writing, one kind of personalised thing, something of interest. Kim Wilkins always does particularly well with cats. So, you know, like everyone still loves a cat. So, find what suits you.
It's funny because I've seen a lot of not just authors but other social media influencers or people who often use their cat.
Yes, a cat. So you said about bios and things like that. Yeah, in your bio, it's not necessary to mention how many cats you've got. It's just not. All the writers have them. And also on bio, we see a ton of biopics. A picture of you and your mates that you've just cropped out of the background is not the one you want for your inside cover of your first book.
No, especially when you're supposed to see their arm around your shoulder. That's right.
Yeah, step away.
Get a good shot. Laurie Jo, I'm interested in what you think has changed in the time that you've been watching writers emerge, I guess, because as you say, so much has changed, and already even over the past 2 years, so much is changing about publishing. It just struck me, I saw that Foundation, one of my absolutely favourite science fiction series that I read, came out in the 50s. I read it, okay, maybe in the 70s, a little bit later, 60s and 70s. But I went back to read it so that I would be prepared for the series as it comes out. And I thought, oh, there's some really terrible, this is really terrible. Yeah. Everybody smokes. There were only men in the story. Sorry, Kevin. You know, and everybody was heterosexual, and it's just like, where are the, it would not pass the Bechdel test, let me tell you. Yeah. It would not. And I thought, how on earth are they going to make that relevant, apart from the great special effects, for today's audience? Because even though I still love that, and Asimov was such an influencer, as we'd say today, what do you think has most changed for writers?
I think probably, especially currently, and even probably since I started, I think it's ramped up even more, sensitivity reads, and that also that associated cost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need valid and correct people doing those reads for you. But that's, you know, if we've got something coming through in one of the ables and it hasn't had a sensitivity read on it and it's got something in there that's going to pull it out of contention, that needs to be done, because whomever we hand it to is going to ask for that to be done anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second one is consent. Mm-hmm. I think lots of I really enjoy a good romance, especially dark romance, and the way that we handle consent inside books has completely changed, and it's really very, very obvious now in that genre, like that it's asked for or it's given or it's verbalized. It's not just a nod of the head or something like that. So there's a real big shift in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, probably positively, people have really questioned how they can go to market. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the self-published person was, you know, poo-pooed for so long. But actually we've seen some really strong wins. We've seen people who have chosen this as a pathway. Famously up here, Ikey Flinthart had a publishing contract and said, I'd rather self-publish my fantasy novels, thanks, and she went off and did it that way. Mm-hmm. So people are having choices a little more around how they're going to find their audience. So I think that's been that's becoming more positive than it has been before.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but I think those are the three kind of big shifts that I've seen.
Yeah, really important ones. And I'm going to jump in here and say, you do a little writing yourself. I know this is about Queensland Writers' Centre. We haven't finished with them, but while we're talking about speculative fiction,
That's what I was curious about too.
I keep it really separate and private because I think, and I write under a pseudonym because I do write in a very specific genre, and I have really struggled while I've been at the Writers' Centre to produce a long-form piece because it's everyone else's work currently. So I've just kind of resigned myself to the fact that while I'm here, we'll get everyone else's work up and over the line and I will wait patiently. But I read a ton. We read probably, I think we were calculating that we've read 1,200 manuscripts over the course of the 3 years for different things.
Then I read
out as well. So you're, you know, sometimes you start to write and you're like, did I do that or is that what I've read? So yes, I do kind of give myself, and I give myself time away to write. I do talk the talk when we're doing, say, the writer's plan, which is a workshop that I hold about getting yourself away to write. But the longer I've been here, the more and more difficult I found it to finish a full piece, even if I start off the year with that as the goal.
Yes.
Because I think my job is really critical. I think it's important to help everyone find their audience that comes in through our doors and our members. So we kind of focus there. But if anyone was to put, you know, a dark romance or a paranormal science fiction down on my desk, it will be read. That is my jam.
Laurie, can I ask something furthermore from what Veronica said, asked about, speculative fiction, and you've also made short films. And I know all of us as artists seem to go back to the same themes, even though we fool ourselves we don't. We seem to rediscover and re-examine the same themes. As an artist, what are the themes that you rediscover in your work?
Yeah, that's Kevin. Probably all my work has kind of a leaning towards the creative person. So even if I'm like working with gods and monsters or something like that, I'm always thinking about the people who create direction, or they create a path for themselves, or they take a path less traveled, but then building it as they move. I'm really fascinated with people who can who make their own existence. Like, I really like that. And lots of my personal work, therefore, is about like on other worlds and things like that, where we can be creating, we can start from scratch or something like that. And that absolutely, if you go back and look at all my work straight out of uni and my short films, it's all about creating and stepping away from mediocrity. Like, that's the big themes in all of my work. If it's going to be mediocre, I'm just like, let someone else do it. So kind of the two themes I, you know, get on my soapbox about. So.
Good soapbox. Another one. Step away from mediocrity. Yeah, that's got to go on a T-shirt, Laura J. That's a great one.
I'm going to do that, Veronica.
Yes, yes, definitely. So I'm conscious that you know, we are eating into your day, but I wanted to ask you a little bit about the future of the Queensland Writers' Centre. And I know, you know, funding is now there for you, but what are some of the great ideas or some of the new things that you think the Queensland Writers' Centre are either, you know, have got on the drawing board or are thinking about?
So probably two things I'll talk about. GenreCon has been long with the centre. I think it was started in 2012, and it is a festival, like a conference for genre writers or genre writers. Mm-hmm. We've moved that to be annual just because we found it was really difficult for people to, oh, that's right, it's GenreCon this year, but I've already done, and they, you know, insert yes. other spec in here. So we wanted to move it to be annual. It's February this year, and I think the full schedule is being released today. But there's so much going on around that event, and I know that COVID is going to be in our way, but we've made a commitment that we're going to move forward with it in February. We do have some virtual elements of it, but if COVID's in our way, then we'll move, because we want these writers to connect. We want them to be able to sit down and have conversations with the likes of Kevin, who's been there before, and really...
Oh, I love it. It was a great festival. It's worth being there in the flesh. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it was a really good year, and we've tried to build off that. We're making sure all artists are paid full ASA rates for their work. That's part of our mission statement at the Writers' Centre. So that's something, you know, over the last 2 or 3 years, we've really been focused on making sure that we can achieve that with the festival. And we're kind of trying to elevate that brand as well, so that it's a must-do activity for people who are in genre writing. Mm-hmm. There's a mystery box this year as well, as there's a murder at the Ooh. Dinner. So you Ooh. Totally want to, you want to be there. the second thing is youth. I think part of what we've promised in our strat plan for the Queensland writers, but for Arts Queensland as well, is that we do want to start to facilitate finding talent, nurturing talent early on, so that we can have, you know, a longer nurturing period for talent to be developed, and they're not just expected to come out of uni with one degree and they're writers now. Yeah. We've started Youth Writing Saturdays, and we're going to be having a Young Writers Festival at the end of the year, just a small one this year to put our toe in the water. But it's around like finding those people who sit in school completely isolated because they're the one person who writes. Mm. They're not in any other sport. They're not in a ballet. They're not, you know, a musician or something. They're usually quite alone, and we want to put them in a room where they see that they belong, mm-hmm. that their skills are really valued, and that they also are learning and having fun and engaged with the art of writing. So youth for us, and trying to increase participation mm-hmm. for young writers is a big focus over the course of the next couple of years.
Fantastic.
That's a great idea, yes. Yes.
So what did you love about GenreCon, Kevin?
Oh, look, what did I love about it? I love, I think as writers, and we are often very shy, we try not to be, but being in a situation like that where you realise everyone else is a little bit shy, and you help bring each other out and you know, enjoy the different sessions that, you know, that help you with your own career. And even when I was there, like, even understanding more about branding, even though I didn't actually go to a workshop on branding, but just through conversations with with other authors.
Mm-hmm.
I think for any author, any festival, because that's the third festival I've been to, the literary festival I've been to as a participant, it really is worth your while to talk to others, to see that you've got the same insecurities and that you all are supportive of each other.
I think that's really well said as well, because some of the people that are back this year, like Amy Kaufman, she attended the very first GenreCon as a participant. So wow. She was, yep. You know, like in the audience mm-hmm. going, oh, this is my tribe. Like, look at this. And she's now our keynote.
Yeah.
With a published career behind yeah. her. And she's thrilled because, yeah, GenreCon has a special place in people's hearts. And we owe that to the previous, organisers of this event. They, you know, it really got into people's hearts. And we hope that by coming annual as well, we can stay in their annual focus. So really excited to have Amy Kaufman. Yeah. And also Marianne DePierre is our a patron for this year. So
exciting. I've been at a workshop of hers. And heard Amy Kaufman speak at Speculate down in Victoria. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Really good. I'm really excited for it. We've got, I don't think it's been released yet, but we've got a couple of New Zealand authors in we're doing pre-records with them mm-hmm. and we're really excited because some of those names are like huge, and so we're like just waiting to release that in a couple of days. So.
Very good. Yeah, we won't be releasing for a couple of days, so we won't mess things up, but yes. Kevin and I'll have to lay bets on who we think that might be, but all good.
Yes.
What two questions I've got left. One is, what's the next event that you want to tell us a little bit about? But I wanted to ask you about readers. So you've mentioned that you're training up readers to be better beta readers or to get involved in some of the work that you do. So can anybody in Queensland get in touch and say, I love reading, I'd like to volunteer to read or do something like that? How does that work?
Yeah, so definitely just write into admin@qldwriters.org.au.
Mm-hmm.
You can be from around Australia as well. It's because the competitions that you'll be like first readers on will be like nationally based. Mm-hmm. What we do is we give them a piece of work that we've already got and we have them read it and see, you know, what they thought. Mm-hmm. We're really also looking for things to not rip the author's heart out. We are looking for things to encourage them to stay writing.
Yes.
You know, like you get a couple of those and you're like, geez, they're never going to write again. But we're looking for, let's find what they're really good at, what they're working on that's working for them. Mm-hmm. And then what can we do if we did this one or two things, how would we elevate their work? Mm-hmm. And so that's the next thing that we're looking for. The beta reader also has to tell us things like when I got bored, when I tapped out, when I got confused by the character.
Yeah.
When there was too much info dump, you know, and they're giving us kind of a guide. Every piece that comes through here, though, just for all people out there, they have at least two sets of eyes in, on average, though, it's 3.5 sets of eyes that go on each piece that come in, especially those first couple of pages, because we want to make, especially when you're reading outside of your comfort zone, for example, me in poetry, mm-hmm. you want to make sure you've got poets looking at this work, not just, yeah. So we do put a mix in so that it's not one person's view of a piece.
Oh, very good. And
I think, sorry, I just wanted to jump in here. And I think it's important for new writers to understand that sometimes it's hard being critiqued. And I think we've all met writers who are doing it for their own ego. And once you try to critique them, they get upset and take their work away or just go and self-publish it the way it is. And I think it's important for new writers to understand, like all of us, nothing's perfect the first time, sometimes the second draft, but you do need that guidance to, as Laurie said, you need to know when, you know, characters may not be developed or there's a boring bit here that people lost interest in. It's so important for new readers to understand that this is about helping you be a better writer.
Exactly. And Rachel Armstrong, who's an emerging writer up in Townsville, she started winning some awards with romance writers after she got a manuscript, after she got feedback. And she was like, feedback is my friend. It's the thing that I did not know that I bored you a stupid year or whatever happened. So it allowed her to fix it. And that's, led her to better places as well. And if you've got a critique group that's so hard that you're just going home every night, devastated, shift.
Find a different group.
That's not the goal either.
Because you do need foster that little spark. Yeah. Mm. And any last questions from you, Kevin? Because I'm going to ask about the next
No. because if I say anything, I'll also be on the same train of thought about getting feedback. And let's move this forward.
Okay. So, Laurie J, what is the latest event or the next event that you want to spruik about? What's happening?
Well, I think, our program is kind of set for the rest of the year. So we do go and check out the ables on our website because you will have scriptable coming and printable. Mm-hmm. GenreCon off into the new year. But then on our program, we've got a boot camp for screenwriters. So, and this is open wherever you are. It is with Aveni Amano and it is about getting you through that first draft, or if you don't know any of the tools of how to, say, take a piece of work and get it into script format, Vinny is going to cover those off as well. And we've got Christina Olsen coming through in October for memoir. Mm-hmm. And this is, this is a really popular area generally for a writer center, but Christina Olsen in this space is like luminary. She's so good at helping people get their ideas down on page. So memoir is going to be pretty big come October, so I hope people come along. But into the new year, we're moving to a guest programmer, so we're starting to, so we'll have craft, but then we're going to have a guest programmer who helps us choose riskier, more social commentary, more ideas around justice systems or gender or, even sensitivities. And they're going to have 3 months of the year, and they will each month give us one interesting person that we're going to talk to in addition to our normal program, so that we can start to have really good conversations with our authors about things that might be, that we wouldn't hear normally when we're just talking about craft. Fantastic. So we're really excited for that to start, and that's into the new year.
Ah, very good.
That's a brilliant idea. That is a brilliant idea.
I would love to tell you who, but we're just...
No, that's okay. We will watch this space, and perhaps when that person starts, we'll have to get you back to do another little short interview. Sure, and they can, jump on and tell us a little bit about the program. Yeah, for sure.
And get that person on to actually give us a hint of what they're going to talk about or how they're going to develop stuff.
Yeah,
perfect.
Definitely.
Yeah, that would be great.
Last words, any last advice for writers, Laurie J?
Get your bum on the seat.
Yes.
And keep writing. If you need any assistance in that, come into the centre. We do have lots of residency spaces where we put people down to write. Make sure you're friends with your writer centre if you're not in Queensland. Mm. But also make sure the people at the writer centre know what you do so that they can, I've mentioned a lot of people today who are our members and things like that because I know what their work is. Yeah. So make sure they know what your goals are so that they can help you. But, bum on the seat, pencils down.
Very good. Now, you can find Queensland Writers' Centres at queenslandwriters.org.au. What about your socials? Where are the QLD Writers' Centre?
Yes, QLD Writers on Insta and on Twitter. And also we have where you can find us on Facebook as well. But Twitter and Instagram are where we do most of our, get our love and attention.
It seems to be where the majority of writers hang out, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
Writers on Twitter.
We do like writers on Twitter, indeed. All right, Laurie J, thank you so much for coming back to chat to us again. And fingers crossed, our technical difficulties are wiped away with the magic of repeat. And thank you very much also to Kevin for jumping on and being part of the conversation today.
Thank you for asking me. I've really enjoyed this.
Thank you so much, Kevin, for the tricky questions. And thank you, Veronica, for having Queensland Writers' Centre. We've loved it. Thank you.
Very good. All right. Take care, everyone. and bye for now.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
meet again, where magic happens.
Australian Book Lovers acknowledges First Nations peoples and recognises their continuous connection to country, community and culture. We pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging and honour the sharing of traditional stories passed down through generations. We're committed to a safe and inclusive welcome for authors and readers of all cultures and backgrounds, including people of LGBTQIA+ communities and their families.